Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Judge Williams and I are very pleased to have sitting with us this morning as a visiting judge, Judge Norgal of the Northern District of Illinois, very experienced judge, and very pleased to have his help. So our first case for argument is Caterpillar versus People's National Bank. Ms. Horn?
Morning. May it please the Court. Evie Horn on behalf of the appellant, People's National Bank. This case is a UCC case involving the priority of two secured creditors, People's National Bank and Caterpillar. They have each had a lending relationship with the debtor, S. Cole Company, dating back as far as 2006. When S. Cole Company defaulted in 2009, each of the parties began their collection efforts. In May of 2010, the bank took possession of and sold collateral belonging to S. Cole, on which both parties held a
security. The problem is you don't have a security agreement.
Correct, Your Honor. We don't have the actual security agreement held by Peabody, which supports their subordination agreement.
Well, did you ask for it?
We did, Your Honor.
Well, what did they say?
Nothing was turned over by Peabody.
No, that's not my question. What did they say?
Your Honor, I don't know the specific contents of the conversation between the bank and Peabody.
What do you mean conversation? What about discovery, third-party discovery?
It was subpoenaed in discovery and no security agreement was produced, which is where we...
Wait, what did you say?
It was subpoenaed in discovery from Peabody. No security agreement was produced, which is...
What was Peabody's response to the subpoena?
They produced a stack of documents, Your Honor, none of which included...
Well, so what was the follow-up?
Well, and the bank had a conversation with Peabody in which they discussed this.
A conversation? Look, you subpoena something, they don't respond. You have to find out why they didn't respond.
Your Honor, the bank is relying on the composite document theory. It is the bank's understanding that...
Look, you're not answering my question. The security agreement may be critical. You subpoena the agreement, and they don't produce it. And you have a conversation?
Your Honor, it's my understanding...
You don't go to the judge and say, look, I subpoenaed this. I had to have it. Where is it?
Correct, Your Honor. That conversation
with
the judge doesn't happen.
That suggests to me you don't think there isn't a security agreement.
And it's the bank's understanding
that... You asked for it. They didn't produce it, so you gave up.
It's the bank's understanding that we believe that it had to
have
been in existence...
What was the content of this conversation?
Your Honor, the bank's employees spoke with Peabody. Counsel did not have a conversation that I am aware of with...
Oh, what was the content of the conversation?
The bank approached Peabody with their understanding that they were in first position. Peabody...
Look, you're not answering my question. I'm asking about the security agreement.
It is my understanding it no longer exists. At some point in time, it had to have, and that is why the bank is left with no choice but to rely on the composite document theory.
Well, is that what Peabody said? We had it, but it doesn't exist anymore? We threw it out, or what? What did they say in this conversation?
Your Honor, I was not privy to this conversation.
Well, so what? This is critical to your case. So why isn't there a record of what was said in that conversation?
I can't answer that, Your Honor.
All right.
And then in terms of the enforcement proceeding, because I was concerned as well that, you know, they didn't produce, so all you had to do was come into the district court and move to enforce the subpoena. Then you would know one way or another. Then you'd have an answer from them in response to a motion. But that kind of motion was not filed, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So then you're out the... So you don't have a document. And this composite documents theory is a new theory that really wasn't raised
Your Honor, we did not call it the composite document theory. However, we did present all of the information that we asked the court to interpret together. I do not believe that we were required to call it by name. However, we asked the district court to look at the 2005 UCC financing statement filed by Peabody, to take into account the bank's testimony that their officer, Scott Collins, had spoken with Peabody asking them to subordinate that position, and the 2008 subordination agreement in which both Peabody and the debtor, S. Cole, signed off acknowledging that Peabody was the secured party under these two specifically identified 2005 UCC financing statements.
So if we don't agree with that theory, and since the document wasn't produced, you really don't have anything to stand on.
Your Honor, if the court does not agree with the composite document theory, there is no other document underlying that 2005 UCC financing statement. That is correct. In the event that the court does agree with the district court's finding with regard to conversion, we are also asking that this court reconsider the district court's holding or judgment granting prejudgment interest on a payment that was tendered to CFSC in June of 2000.
Suppose Peabody did have a security interest. How does that become the bank's security interest?
The bank had a 2005 subordination agreement from Peabody. The bank itself held a UCC blanket lien dating back to 2008 when these additional loans were forwarded. It was filed in August of 2008. And with the subordination agreement, Peabody agreed to allow the bank to essentially step ahead of its position and enforce its lien before
yes,
Peabody.
Yes, but what is it, what exactly does that have to do with the security interest? You could have priority without a security interest.
The bank had a loan, a commercial security agreement, and a UCC financing statement in 2008 that were all executed in conjunction with the subordination agreement.
So wait, you're saying that Peabody had I don't understand. Who gave the bank a security interest?
S. Cole Company gave the bank a security interest. In 2008, they were having difficulties with their operations and needed additional funding.
They called. Okay, but how does that allow Peabody to give priority to give a security interest to the bank? I don't understand that.
Peabody did not give a security interest to the bank. S. Cole gave a security interest to the bank. Peabody, being a prior secured creditor, allowed the bank to step ahead of it in enforcement of its lien.
Yes, but where's the security interest? Where's the bank's security
of the bank?
Interest?
The bank's security interest comes from a 2008 promissory note and commercial security agreement that went along with it.
And that's the missing security agreement.
No, Your Honor, the missing security agreement is...
What is the other... So you're relying on another security agreement.
The missing security agreement is one held by Peabody.
I'm asking about this other security agreement you've invoked.
The bank does hold a security agreement in 2008, a blanket lien on S. Cole's assets, that was given to the bank by S. Cole in conjunction with the promissory note when the bank advanced additional funds in 2008.
But you're not seeking to enforce that agreement. I'm puzzled.
Your Honor, it's that agreement was not called into question in the district court. The bank's actual lien on the property was upheld by the district court. It's whether the bank is able to step ahead of Peabody based upon that 2008 subordination agreement that is in question. Your Honor, I see I've used my time.
Okay, well you can reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal. Now, Mr. Doyle.
May it please the Court, Daniel Doyle, on behalf of the Appellee Caterpillar Financial Services Corporation. Your Honors, the appellant here in its briefs, identifies no potential errors.
What about this last point? I didn't follow it. What? Maybe you can clarify it. The how does Peabody's security interest somehow become translated into a security interest for the bank?
Your Honor, it's been a mystery throughout this case to me, too.
Pardon?
It's been a mystery to me throughout this case also. I don't understand how Caterpillar's security interests that were perfected prior to 2006 and then re-perfected twice through a refinancing in which Caterpillar refinanced its purchase money collateral with Peabody, with Coal Trade, which is a Peabody affiliate that markets coal. Trial Exhibit 2 is the security agreement. It says PEC security agreement. There is no missing security agreement. Peabody's in-house lawyer who drew up the agreements, in his testimony said, this is the operative agreement that establishes the security interest between Peabody and the debtor S. Cole. Now, even with and included in Trial Exhibit 2 is an explicit subordination of Peabody to Caterpillar's security interests, as well as the bank's, as to a pool of collateral that's not at issue here. So, in 2006, Caterpillar Financial, the first lien on this pool of disputed equipment that it had a purchase money security interest in, which is clear from Exhibit 4, which are the Caterpillar Financial documents. And then to really kind of create double coverage under this refinancing, this pool of collateral was transferred to a special purpose entity, PEC Equipment Company, which is still in existence today and serves no other purpose for Peabody other than to function in these refinancings to transfer title away from the debtor and into escrow. So it seems clear to me, Your Honor, that there is no way under the sun that any subordination agreement that is between the bank and Peabody that occurs 2 years after both of those transactions could possibly take priority over Caterpillar's interest. That's one of the reasons why we argue in our brief that this is a frivolous appeal and this panel should issue an order to show cause, particularly when you fold in the misconduct by the bank. We file suit after we receive a letter saying...
You're saying the misconduct by the bank. The bank's position is that Caterpillar gave them permission to sell the property. Is that correct?
Your Honor, we sent them a letter that said that because of the sale price, we did not object to the commercial reasonableness of the sale. But we reserved all rights to sue them for damages. For example, the letter that they sent us saying, this is now our collateral, you cannot have access to it. If you try to get access to it, we will consider it a breach of peace.
What was the harm?
Well, the harm was that Caterpillar could not get its collateral at that point.
I know, but it was sold for a price that you're happy
with. Your Honor, I agree with you there. It was actually a price that was more than fair. The damage comes with the proceeds of the collateral sale, $2.5 million. Rather than pay it over to Caterpillar, at least negotiate something out, they paid themselves off. Then they tried to pay the surplus to Peabody, who said, it's not our money, it's Caterpillar's, pay it to them.
Now, Caterpillar kept the check from the sale of the equipment and has had it since June of 2010, right?
Yes, we have, Your Honor.
And should we find that this constitutes an acceptance of payment? I mean, why didn't you just send the check back and sue?
Your Honor, frankly, it was an oversight. We probably should have sent it back, but it went stale in 120 days anyhow. And that was not issued, you know, that issue was not argued at trial. The other thing is the cases cited in support of this new theory that is brought up on appeal deal with debtors attempting to pay creditors. Those cases say explicitly it only applies to debtor-creditor relations, not to third parties.
How long had the parties been doing business together? Is there some pattern here?
Caterpillar and S. Cole?
Yes.
Your Honor?
And the bank?
I believe that Caterpillar provided and financed the equipment that put S. Cole into business back in 2004.
What, was this one of a series of transactions or a one-shot
deal? No, Your Honor, there was only two. One was with regard to about $6 million worth of coal mining equipment back in 2004-2005, and the second transaction was this refinancing in 2006.
There was no problem with the first transaction?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I see my time is about up, but, Your Honor, let me finish by saying there is no dispute of law, the dispute of fact that is there are no issues on appeal that could possibly reverse this decision by Judge Murphy. And I would urge the court to affirm it and to consider bringing sanctions for a frivolous appeal. Thank you.
Can I ask one last question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is this, quote, composite document theory known by any other name?
No, Your Honor. I've never heard of it before, and I frankly don't understand how you can create a document that supersedes a security interest that's already in place. And one other point is that Trial Exhibit 2 contains a provision that says it supersedes all prior written or oral agreements of the parties, so that even if it did exist, it would have been superseded by the 2006 document. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Doyle. So, Ms. Horn, anything further?
Your Honor, if I may just address a few points briefly raised by Mr. Doyle. With regard to the issue of a purchase money security interest, that is not a finding that was made by the trial court. The notion of not being charged prejudgment interest on the payment that was tendered to CAT is something that was specifically addressed in the trial court as part of our closing arguments. And the court acknowledged that the purpose of us raising that issue was, in fact, to address an entry of prejudgment interest. With regard to the underlying, and Your Honor's prior question about the underlying security interest of the bank, that comes, it's identified and perfected by an August 27, 2008 Uniform Commercial Code filing by the bank.
That's not a security agreement.
No. It is in conjunction with a security agreement that was dated. Forgive me, Your Honor. I believe in July 29th of 2008, by the bank. The bank is seeking to step ahead of Peabody pursuant to the subordination agreement. Subordination agreements are something that are widely accepted and are found within the Uniform Commercial Code itself. It's not a new theory that the bank has tried to come up with.
But it's the stepping ahead that's puzzling, because how does that make up for the absence of a security agreement to which the bank is a signatory?
Well, Your Honor, the subordination agreement doesn't make up for that. And if this court does not agree with the composite document theory, then the subordination agreement essentially has no effect. What it would allow the bank to do would be to be paid before Peabody only up to the amount that Peabody was owed and had a valid lien on. Your Honor, I see my time is up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Horn, and thank you, Mr. Doyle.